homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. What I want to talk about this morning are the four immeasurables, but from a Mahayana point of view. So let me just start with a quote that I found that kind of got me going on this. It's from a book by Edward Kahn's, The History of Indian Buddhist Thought. And I don't know whether this is original to him or he was quoting someone else. But it presents the four immeasurables from the point of view of Mahayana practice, which of course Soto Zen is part of. Bodhisattvas practice compassion, but are not given to sentimentality. They practice loving kindness, but are not given up to attachments. They are joyous of heart, but ever grieved over the sight of suffering beings. They practice equanimity, but never cease benefiting others. The four immeasurables are sometimes called the four Brahma Viharas, or the four divine abodes. Reverend Margaret spoke on two of these this past Sunday, and you may have heard her talk, so there'll be a little bit of overlap. But I hope I can bring out a different perspective and find the source of these four immeasurables within our own tradition. They are practiced in Theravadan Buddhism quite prominently, but they're there in the background for us, in the same way that we practice the four wisdoms, but they're in the background of Theravadan Buddhism. Okay? It's just that it's different in our practice, and we use them kind of occasionally for when the situation requires them, or it just seems good to practice a little loving kindness or a little compassion. In Theravadan Buddhism, they use them to achieve certain meditation states, which are called the jhanas. We don't focus on the jhanas very much in Soto Zen. We view those as very wonderful experiences, but you still have to come back to the world of suffering. The four jhanas are not specifically Buddhist. They were what the Buddha learned before he struck out on his own under the Bodhi tree. He learned to access the different jhanas. And within the context of Theravadan Buddhism, they make a lot of sense because they're used to achieve these meditation states or samadhi, which then provide a basis for insight. In Soto Zen, we combine the samadhi experience or the samadhi practice with the insight practice, the vipassana. That's the reflection in serene reflection. And the samadhi part is the serene part. So we get serene reflection, and we do those as one unified practice. But as I said, sometimes they can be helpful. They're sort of like tools in a tool belt. You have a lot of different tools. You don't use the same ones all the time. And you pull out the tool that's appropriate for the job. The reason they're called the four immeasurables or the four Brahma Viharas is because Brahma was the chief Indian god in the religion of the time that the Buddha lived. And a Vihara just means a dwelling. They often called monasteries Viharas. So a Brahma Vihara is where Brahma, the chief god, lives, and that's a state of pretty much ultimate bliss. Okay, four divine abodes, the same idea. This is where the divinity lives, and by practicing these qualities, we can be as if in a divine abode. Okay, as I said, they're said to be quite blissful. And again, from our point of view, if they can, they're sort of a dead end, because you've got to come back and do the hard work on cleansing of karma. This is why the Buddha found that on their own, they just weren't adequate, because they didn't free him from the suffering that's created by karma. They're called the immeasurables because they're without limit, both in the experience but also in the practice. Let me just mention what the four are, and for those who might not know. The first is loving kindness, and the second is compassion. The third is sympathetic joy, and the fourth is equanimity. And I'm going to talk a little bit about each one and read a few selections from our Soto Zen scriptures where these are brought out and are taught as qualities that we want to practice as well. The first Brahma-Vihara is kindness, loving kindness, sometimes translated as friendliness. This is universal goodwill, what Christians used to call brotherly love. But in Buddhism, it's extended to all people and all beings. That includes animals and beings in other states of existence. It's universal. It's immeasurable. It's the intention, if we're going to define it, it's the intention of goodwill, the wish for the welfare and happiness of all beings. The love that it talks about is the will to give, not the will to possess. Each of these qualities are often talked about in terms of there's a near enemy and a far enemy. And the far enemy of loving kindness is quite obvious, I think probably to anyone. It's hatred, ill will, anger, the negative, fiery, karma-producing quality. But there's a near enemy too, and they're called the near enemy because they're so close we may not recognize it. And the near enemy, loving kindness, is attachment, clinging, greed, or conditional love. Okay? So as we talk about loving kindness, and as you practice loving kindness, you want to purify that practice by letting go of the attachment, letting go of the clinging, letting go of the ill will, letting go of the hatred. Few of us may have really enemies, but probably all of us have people that we don't dislike or people that we disagree with. And this is where the practice of loving kindness can really come into be of benefit. The way it's usually practiced is you start with practicing loving kindness to yourself, okay? And then you, once you kind of got that going, then you extend it in successfully larger circles. You start with your family, your relatives, your friends, your teachers, your community, people that you don't know. You know, you can do it geographically. You can start with yourself in your own house, in your own neighborhood, in your city, in your county, in your state, in your continent, you know, in the whole world. And in all of them, you work your way up to all beings. You know, you want your love for sentient beings to be all-encompassing. All right? Now, the main place where this is talked about in Soto Zen is in a work by Dogen called The Four Exemplary Acts of a Bodhisattva. And these are the four wisdoms. And the second, which he emphasizes primarily speech, is where this is brought out and we're encouraged to practice. So I'm quoting from Reverend Master Hubert's translation of the Shobo Genzo. Kindly speech means that when we encounter sentient beings, we first of all give rise to feelings of genuine affection for them and offer them words that express our pleasure in knowing them. To put it more broadly, we do not use language that is harsh or rude. Even in secular society, there are respectful customs for asking how people are. To speak with a feeling of genuine affection for sentient beings, as if they were still newborn babes, is what kindly speech is. We should praise those who have virtue and pity those who do not. Through having our fondness for kindly speech gradually increases. Thus, even kindly speech that goes unrecognized or unnoticed will still manifest itself right before us. While our present life persists, we should become fond of speaking kindly, so that we do not regress or turn away from it for generation after generation and for life after life. Kindly speech is the foundation for overcoming those who are angry and hostile, as well as for promoting harmony among others. Otherwise, this is a serious practice. Okay, this isn't just Buddhism light. This is right at the heart of what we're trying to do. When we hear kindly speech that is spoken directly to us, it brightens our countenance and delights our heart. When we hear of kind speech having been spoken about us in our absence, this makes a deep impression on our heart and our spirit. Keep in mind that kindly speech arises from a loving heart, and a loving heart makes compassion its seed. You should explore the idea that kindly speech can have the power to turn the very heavens around, and it is not merely a matter of praising someone's abilities. And that last sentence, Reverend Master Jiu translated in the Shishogi, which is taken from this work by Dogen, that tenderness can have a revolutionary impact upon the mind of humans, mind of man. Okay, so loving kindness. Another place it's really emphasized is in the Tenzo Kyokun, the instructions to the chief cook. And there, Dogen talks about the three minds, the mind of generosity, the mind of gratitude, and the mind of what he calls in that work parental love, the love that parents have for their children, the love that adult animals have for their offspring. And we want to cultivate that toward not only our food, but also to the people that we're cooking it for. It's universal. Another way you can bring loving kindness to mind is to think about iconography, if that's a way in for you. Loving kindness is often represented by Jizo Bodhisattva or Kishtigarbha. He's pretty much the only bodhisattva who appears as a monk. He usually appears as a very young, shining, bright monk, and he's holding a staff. And the staff represents the kindness that he is using as he walks the path. And he's shaking the staff, and the staff has rings on it which jangle. And as he walks, shakes that staff so that other animals or insects or whatever can get out of the way, so he doesn't step on them. We use Jizo a lot in teaching kindness to children, and typically we start with small animals, insects, teaching them to respect them and respect their life and avoiding killing them. And then we work our way on up to animals and to human beings. As I said, Jizo, you can usually recognize him by his staff, that's his attribute, or the fact that he's appearing as a very kind, gentle monk. But he's also very powerful, that he's the one who also vows to appear in hell. As long as there are people in hell, as long as there are people who are suffering, he's going to take shape and form and help that being. Okay? So again, it's a universal vow. Kanzen usually appears as, you know, a beautiful white lady, or she can appear as anything, because that's her vow, is to appear in any form or shape that is helpful to the person involved. Jizo's vow is to appear anywhere there is suffering and that he can be of help. And then thinking of our retreat these few days, Maitreya, whose festival we'll celebrate on the first, that's his festival day. His name actually means the friendly one or loving kindness, and I think this is again underlines how important this quality is that the incoming Buddha, he's supposed to be the next Buddha, is practicing loving kindness. Also the Dalai Lama sometimes says, my religion is kindness. Okay, so this is a very fundamental attribute in our Buddhist practice. So the next Brahma Vihara is compassion. And this is the wish to alleviate suffering. Whereas loving kindness is the wish for the happiness of all beings, compassion is a little more specific. It's the wish to alleviate the suffering that sentient beings are experiencing. The near enemy is pity, okay, or grief, or sorrow, because in compassion we suffer with. Okay, we're not looking down on someone else. We're not objectifying them. We're not keeping or viewing them at a distance. We're actually right there with the person, the animal, the situation, whatever it is that we feel warrants our compassion. The opposite is wanting others to suffer, or cruelty. And probably most of us don't have that as an issue, but if we find ourselves becoming hard-hearted, you know, harboring ill will. And I found in this last election, I practiced compassion and loving kindness a lot, and it really helped get me through it without becoming upset or too attached to the outcome. It was really helpful. So, and the near enemy that we want to watch out for is, as I read from Edward Kahn's, is sentimentality. We can be compassionate without being sentimental. And again, compassion moves us to do something. Okay. Again, this is where it's slightly different than loving kindness. Loving kindness is an attitude of mind. Compassion is an activity. It moves us to do something about the suffering of other beings. Sometimes the most that we can do is to just focus on our own training. Okay. That in itself is doing something, okay, and shouldn't be overlooked. But when we bring compassion to mind, that's what we ask, is, what can I do? How can I respond to this? what's the altruistic response to this suffering? And then as one teacher I found on the internet said, the way they expressed it was, the ultimate goal is to extinguish all suffering by stopping the process of rebirth and the suffering that automatically comes with living, which is enlightenment. And this is the bodhicitta, or the Buddha-seeking mind, the bodhisattva vow, the wish to liberate all sentient beings from the sufferings of cyclic existence and to become a fully enlightened Buddha oneself in order to act as the perfect guide for them. There's several different ways that one can interpret the bodhisattva vow. This is something I read the Dalai Lama said. Most people, the way they take it, is that they wish to become a Buddha quickly so that they have the knowledge to help other beings. Okay, so the focus is on their own practice. And then there's a middle way of one practices to take other beings along with one. And then the highest form is one is willing to sacrifice one's own training and enlightenment for the benefit of others. In Soto Zen, we aim for the highest form. Okay? And if you find yourself not being able to generate that, well, start where you are. You know, start with practicing for the benefit of others. Start practicing for the benefit of your own wisdom so that you can help others. And then if you can move into practicing compassion and wanting to take others with you, okay, practice that. And then gradually we can move into what is truly selfless or unselfish, in that we can practice for the benefit of others without expecting a reward, okay, for responding selflessly to a situation. Looking at compassion from the point of view of iconography, we have Kanzeon, Avalokiteshvara. Sometimes with 1,000 hands and 1,000 eyes. 1,000 hands to help where it's needed, 1,000 eyes to see where the help is needed. The writings that are particularly helpful for developing compassion and where we find the source of this in our own tradition, Reverend Master Jiyu has a chapter in Zen is Eternal Life on compassion, developing the heart of compassion. It's worth looking at and studying. Of course, we have the Kanzan scripture, which is a chapter from the Lotus Sutra. I'm not going to read from those, but I think you can get them up and find them yourselves and benefit from them. The next Brahma Vihara is sympathetic joy, or sometimes translated as empathic gladness or appreciative joy. Okay? It's being happy with someone's fortune or happiness. It's the potential of bliss and happiness of all sentient beings, as they can all become Buddhas. Okay? We rejoice in the merits and virtues of others. That's the way it's usually put in our tradition, and we find its foundation in the vows of Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. If you notice, we're getting a progression here. There's a specific Bodhisattva affected with each of the Brahma Viharas. There's Jizo for kindness, Avalokiteshvara for compassion. Now we've got Samantabhadra for appreciative joy. And this is something we can practice just by when we hear of something good, rejoicing in it, okay, being glad about it. You know, there used to be, you know, when I was growing up in team sports, one of the things they, you know, would teach us is, you know, even if you lose, you be glad for the people who win. Okay. when you hear of something good, when even the smallest good, be glad about it, rejoice in it. And when you do that, you actually share in the merit of that action. Okay? So if there's, it's enlightened self-interest to rejoice in the merit and virtue of others. One tradition even expands it to assisting the merits and virtues of others. Okay? So this is our efforts to look outside of ourselves, see the good, and rejoice in it. The obvious opposite, the enemy, if you will, is jealousy, when you can't accept the happiness of others. And that's a real, you know, this is what's really good to practice when you are feeling jealous or envious. The far enemy is sort of a spaced out bliss. I think it could be almost probably the love and light heresy, where one is just thinking, well, everything is wonderful, everyone is wonderful, everything is happy, everything is perfect, and not acknowledging the suffering that does exist. And the highest form of empathic joy is rejoicing in the high rebirth or enlightenment of others. Okay. That's how the Bodhisattva practices that. And the fourth Brahmavihara is equanimity. The definition is not to distinguish between friend, enemy, or stranger, but regard every sentient being as equal. It is a clear-minded, tranquil state of mind, not being overpowered by delusions, mental dullness, or agitation. The near enemy is indifference, or not caring. The opposite is anxiety, worry, stress, and paranoia caused by dividing people into good and bad. It's the basis for unconditional, altruistic love, compassion, and joy for others' happiness and bodhicitta. Okay? In order to practice the other three, you have to develop some degree of equanimity. And equanimity is not only the Brahmavihara that is necessary with each of them, it's also the highest of the four Brahmaviharas. It's actually a gradual succession in the way that you practice them. You start with loving kindness, then you develop compassion, then rejoicing in others' merit, and then equanimity. I didn't find many writings about equanimity in our Mahayana tradition. And I think it's because what is called equanimity is a fundamental part of our meditation practice. Okay? Qualities I read are qualities that are come about from meditation, having a quiet, still, bright mind. Okay? The equanimity is extended to everyone, you know, as broad as we can make it, as immeasurable as we can make it. The equanimity is particularly helpful when we're practicing the precepts. Okay. The precepts require a certain level of restraint, okay? And and equanimity is a key element in being able to pause briefly enough to refrain from evil. I am going to now, that's all what I'm going to say about the four measurables, but I'll read this quote again, Edward Kahn, because I think again it shows the Mahayana view. Bodhisattvas practice compassion, but are not given to sentimentality. They practice loving kindness, but are not given up to attachments. They are joyous of heart, but ever grieved over the sight of suffering beings. They practice equanimity, but never cease benefiting others.